This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Got our first guest in the studio already today.
So moving right along.
Exactly.
That's
who have we got, Eve?
So today we've skipped the regulars of Stephen and Rowan, and we've gone straight to the juicy bits. joining us today, we have artistic director, double bassist, G violinist, producer, educator, radio host, Miranda Hill.
Yes, I am all of those things. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for joining us. And also with us, we have incredible soprano and prize of the which we'll explain shortly, Judith Dodsworth. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Pleasure. And so these two are here today to talk to us about Midsummer's Homophonic Pride Prize Composition Competition, which is quite a mouthful.
Well.
Thank you.
You did well. I've been practicing at the Midsummer Pride Prize Composition Competition, but it's a mouthful.
It's quite a tongue twister. Yeah. but yeah, I mean, who better to chat with us about, what's the word? Exquisite control of, you know, the mouth and projection.
Careful.
Then Judith.
Trimotley, yes.
Oh, dear, I can see where this is going.
Yes,
that is what I do, yes.
But before we get started talking about this prize, which has been around for a few years now, it'd be great for our listeners to gauge a little bit of info about yourselves. So, Miranda, starting with you, tell us a little bit about your background in the arts, because from what I know, you've studied everywhere, you've performed everywhere, you've got quite an interesting collection of performances behind you.
Okay, how long do you have? yes, I'm a double bassist kind of by training and G violinist, as you said, which is a Baroque pre-double bass instrument. I just basically put that in my bio to sound a little bit fancy. I'm double bassist working within classical music and, yep, trained in America and in Australia, studied in Europe, all of the things that we dream of doing as young people. But now one of my biggest things is this project is Homophonic. It's been running for, I think, 14 years now, the artistic director, and it's a celebration of queerness. When I was a young person growing up in classical music, I started the violin when I was 3. I was one of those little obnoxious nerds who stand outside the supermarket and busk, and they're terrible, but you can't help but give them money because they're so cute and little and terrible. I was one of those. But I loved classical music and I loved the orchestras. It's what I wanted to do. But I was also a young queer person and no one ever told me that I could be both and that the people I admired in classical music were both. Tchaikovsky, Corelli, Schubert. There's like all of these names, all of these big names within classical music were also queer people. And I was never taught that. And that history was very straightwashed at the time. So I started Homophonic as a bit of a like, oi, like we're here, we're allowed to be gay and musicians and allowed to celebrate the intersection of those two things. And yeah, so that's Homophonic. And that is, you know, pretty much my life's purpose is making that happen. If you want to know what makes me tick, it's that.
And was it an instant sort of success with audiences for what you were doing at that point?
Yes. Yeah, so
and
the
did
first
you get that
show,
feedback straight away?
Yeah, the first show honestly was a bit of a, oh, I'll throw something at the wall. You know, like I wanted to do a show in Midsummer and I'll try something out and it sold out. I'm like, oh. Oh, I see. is a format that works and this is something that people want to hear. But also, I get to support composers actively. I get to commission a lot of works, actively supporting queer composers in Australia, which is really special and builds a really strong community between musicians and composers. But it has always been, there's always been a desire for it. And I think that is because I say that classical music was straightwashed. Classical music is not straight. the people you meet in classical music, both the people performing and the people listening and paying for the expensive opera tickets, you know, a lot of those people are not really straighty 180 types. Yeah. But the program notes always were. Mm. You know, we talk about Mahler's wife, we would never talk about Tchaikovsky's lover and these sort of elements. So it has always been it's always had a really nice moment of connectivity and connection, homophonic, with audiences and with ourselves as performers. But it also, it's grown, you know, and so now we do 4 shows every year and they always sell out in advance. So if you're looking at coming, you should definitely book when those tickets go on sale. But basically, we love it. Audiences love it. Judith loves it. It's great. You should come. It's fun.
Yeah. And we will. And everyone else should too.
Yeah.
And speaking of Judith, Judith, tell us about your own background.
Oh, goodness. So, yes, I am a classical soprano. Sometimes I'm a mezzo. If you need a mezzo, I'll be a mezzo. I'm a voice for hire, basically.
What's a mezzo?
A mezzo is a slightly lower female voice.
Okay.
So, yeah, look, I think I've sort of carved out a career of being a versatile singer. I guess a lot of people would call me an opera singer, but opera is a very, very small part of what I do because there's so much more to classical music than just opera and classical vocal music than opera. I love opera. Opera's fun and enormous and huge and overwhelming, but there is so much fantastic classical music that is not opera. There's song, there's art song, there's lieder, there's oratorio, there are so many different forms. And I particularly get a kick out of new music as well, new classical music. So things that, are pretty sort of fresh off the presses.
Well, this is incredibly appropriate for you then.
Absolutely, absolutely.
How did you first figure out that this is the path you wanted to go down? Were you a singer at school? Were people encouraging you back then?
I started as a pianist. My mum is an excellent pianist and she started teaching me when I was about 4 and I never did my scales and I think I was never going to be a concert pianist, but I always had this ability to, if I heard a song, I could play it. I could sort of make stuff up. There was always music at home and I would sing and I sang in choirs growing up. I don't know, singing was just always something that felt sort of natural to me, and it's the path that I've taken, and I've studied in Europe. I've sung with quite a lot of different professional ensembles and opera companies, and I work with a lot of composers and do a lot of new music.
In your career, what point was it where you wanted to sort of delve into things like this that we've got coming up with homophonic? Like, was there a bit of a turning point for you to move away from the traditional?
Yeah, I think it happened when I was studying in Vienna. And which is obviously a city that's very steeped in traditional Western classical music, but there is also a very strong tradition of more experimental music. And I was singing with a group called the Arnold Schoenberg Choir, and the teacher I was working with at the time said, "Have you thought about specialising in new music because you've got a bit of a penchant for that?"
Right. So I wonder what that looked like or sounded like at that time where they saw that in you. What do you think?
I guess I was never your conventional opera singer. I think that would didn't quite look like the other sopranos. Right.
for the listeners at home, Judith has blue hair.
Yes. Yeah, didn't have blue hair at the time, but couldn't quite embrace the sort of pink taffeta and the
It's a really interesting question, but I do think, certainly knowing Judith's work as a director and an audience member, there's within her work, there's a willingness to just go there, to take that risk, very vulnerable on stage, but also very willing to make her own sounds and not just try to sound within the preconceived understanding of beauty. Like, there's this understanding of... Yeah, you're welcome. There's the understanding of beauty within classical music. And then new music is often very beautiful, but it's finding its own beauty. It's finding the beauty in the fragile or the broken or the deliberately slightly distorted, but finding the beauty within that. And not everyone can do that. That can be practiced, but I think you've got to have the willingness to go for it.
Look, go hard or go home. And the older I get, the less I worry about what people think. And Miranda's absolutely right. I think it does redefine. It questions what is beautiful and how it can exist in the counter to something that is perhaps less beautiful. And I think they both become more meaningful.
Yeah,
through that.
So tell us about how this new Pride Prize composition is related to Homophonic. What is this and how have people become involved? What can we expect?
So the Pride Prize started 5 years. I do just say Pride Prize. I can't say the Midsummer Homophonic Pride, Pride Prize competition every single time. The Pride Prize for short to its friends. Started 5 years ago. A long-term audience member and friend of Homophonic actually decided to donate a small amount of money, not tiny, but donated an amount of money to in memory of his mother to make something. It's like she loved music, she loved to make things. I want to make something in her memory. And so we came up, you know, we batted some ideas around and came up with this idea of a, you know, a composition competition for specifically for queer identified Australian composers. And I do believe at the time it was very much the only one of that ilk, but also to write for one person in particular. You know, so we can say, you're going to write for this oboe player, and people can look up that person's work and can understand who they are writing for. But to really create, because part of the prize is workshopping time, you know, which is in the composition world invaluable. So that went for a few years, and then Midsummer came on board as our primary sponsor, which is absolutely amazing. I can't think of another queer arts organisation around the world that is supporting experimental music and classical music in this way. So massive props to them, and the music that's come from it so far has been mind-blowing. So we're looking for voices. We're looking for people who have something to say. It doesn't have to be specifically queer. It's queer because you're involved, to be honest. And it's queer because we're involved. It is queer because it is. It doesn't need to be themed in that sense. But we're looking just for your ideas. The application is deliberately easy. There is no application fee. There is no age limit. There is no career limit. There are no career requirements. It is deliberately open and easy to apply. We don't want you to write any notes in advance. Please don't do that. I don't want your free labor. We're going to pay you for your time. So we're looking for your ideas for the things that, you know, what inspires you. You hear Judith sing and you think about the voice, what do you want to write? These ideas that are well beyond anything that either of us could come up with if we sat around at the pub and bashed ideas around for an hour. Every time in this process, ideas come forward and composers come forward, and it all four so far have been so dramatically different from each other. They're from the sublime to the ridiculous things that, and the highly, last year's was highly sexual. And
we like that too. There was,
but it's a really beautiful way for two artists to connect, to make something in a really defined space and guaranteed performance, guaranteed audience, a guaranteed space for this collaboration to come out into the world.
And so that's part of the prize as well, not only getting to work with Judith and have these, I think it was at three sessions.
Yes, in person workshopping sessions.
Workshopping, but it also has a live performance aspect at the end, connected to Midsummer Festival, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, at Homophonic at La Mama Theatre in February next year.
Great venue for it, actually.
And most importantly, $2,500.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously.
We can't forget that bit, the $2,500.
Brilliant. So if anyone wants to find out more about this, where should they head to get the details?
On the Midsummer website. It's on the front page. You cannot miss it. But also on, if you want to go through the previous winners and have a little trip down memory lane of electroacoustic music for solo instruments, they're on the Homophonic website, homophonic.com.au. I think it's /Pride Prize.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for chatting with us today. And if anyone wants to find out more, they can follow those details. We would have loved to speak to you with you for a little bit longer, but we've got a very jam-packed show today, unfortunately.
Which means you'll have to come back.
Yeah.
I think we must do.
If we must.
Absolutely. We will insist. With performances happening from the 8th to the 10th of February 2024, we will absolutely have you in again because we're going to need to check in and see where things are at.
Yes.
Who won?
So excited to see what they come up with.
Applications close on the 3rd. By the way, they close next this week coming. So
yes. So get on it. Absolutely.
Get in on it. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Miranda Hill and Judith Dodsworth here on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.